Okay, so as we said in our pre-morning sitter meeting, so for today we're going to focus on, again, a little bit more broad, a little bit easier, but why is it important to learn Kaddish Yom? What I gave you was the Chafetz Chaim, okay, that, whatever, Rabbi Yisrael Meir HaKohen, right? The Chafetz Chaim is just his eponymous work. Eponymous, got that? No. I'm seeing blank spares, which means the work for which he becomes named. And so he wrote this Sefer Likutei Halachot to Kachem. Before we started the Makarot, so I asked you guys why you think there's value to learn Kachem. So we had a few possibilities. We had it's a mitzvah to learn Torah in general, regardless of whether it's practical, mitzvah to know Torah. It is practical or will be practical. Or it's practical in the sense that it integrates into other halacha because all of Torah is connected. Did I miss any of the possibilities that people raised? I think I got everybody. But we'll see the Chafetz Chaim's suggestions. And then again, on Sunday, we'll launch into to actually starting the topics of Karbanot and Zvachim. So as is often true with introductions, it starts off very flowery, which is why I didn't, give it... all to you, but if you want to look at his, very flowery introduction, right, he starts off with Baruch Hashem Elokei Hashamayim Elokei Haaretz Asher Natan Lanu Torato HaKdosha HaChamuda Mikol Chemda Kedichtiv HaNechmadim Mizahav Mipaz Rav Mitukim Midvash VeNofet Tzufim. And thank God who gave us the Torah, it's sweeter than all sweets and more valuable than all that's valuable. He quotes Pesukim to that effect. Right now, he gives you a little bit of a philosophical introduction to why is it that the Torah is compared both to Zahav and to honey. Well, he says there are two reasons that things can be valuable. One is their intrinsic value, and the other is because they are sweet, they are enjoyable. And those are caught in the Pesukim for him. Dahainu, Zahav upaz rav shavye. Gold is intrinsically valuable. Rav od aval eno mato klal, but it is not sweet. It's not itself enjoyable. Udvash udavar matok, and honey is itself sweet. Aval shovi eno kol kach, but its value is not that much. V'torato hakadosha yesh b'shtei ma'alot, and the Torah has both benefits. Dahainu shishave rav meod yoter mizahav upaz. It is worth more than gold. And it is sweeter than honey and other sweet things. And what it means is that the light of the wisdom of Torah is sweet. And then he quotes several midrashim to that effect. We can skip down a little bit here, right? But he talks about, how important Torah is and how much he loves Torah and the like, okay? But then he gets to why he thinks that learning Kachim itself is important. And as you'll see, he raises some of the possibilities that that you did, right? So first this was Israel Isaac's suggestion, right? Was, yes, there's the practical value. Remind me your name again. Jake, okay. There's the practical aspect, but there's also the mitzvah to learn Torah. So his first argument is the reason it's valuable to learn is there's practical halacha, but then there's, independent of practical halacha, the value to learn Torah. Period. End of story. So at the first arrow, he says, "Vinei inyan limud Torah nechlak l'shnei sugim." There are two types of learning Torah. Aleph, kidei leida mitzvotea ulekayim, ulekayimam, to know the mitzvot and to fulfill them. That's knowing practical things, and that comes first. Now, obviously, before he wrote his work on Kachim, he wrote many other works. Which work did he write to make sure you knew practical halacha? What? Yes and yes. Very good. Yeah. Meaning he wrote the Mishnah Berurah, which is his comprehensive commentary on Aruch Chaim, which is the most practical of the four halakim of Shulchan Aruch, which is daily living and chagim and brachot and things like that. And obviously he also wrote a number of books on mitzvah ben lechavero, the most famous being his books on Lashon Hara, Sefer Chafetz Chaim, which is his eponymous work, and Shmirat HaLashon, as well as other works on labor law, lending money, on a host of different issues. So one aspect of Torah is the practical one, and second is limuda inenim she'ena nogin bizman hazeh lemaaseh, learning that which is not practical nowadays, kimo seder zraim v'seder taharot, like right zraim. Now it's interesting that for him zraim was completely impractical, which obviously nowadays it is very practical. Yeah, 2 years ago in yeshiva it was. Right, it was Shemitah, and we learned Shviat in Yeshiva. Right, it is practical. It wasn't just well. Zroim is about all agricultural law. Mesechet Shviat is about Shemitah. Yeah. Say it again. Yeah, that, right. That's why he's saying it, because when he's writing, right, I don't know exactly what year he wrote this, but he's writing it, let's say, late 19th, early 20th. But he died in the 30s. Right, there aren't that many people in Israel. There isn't thriving agriculture. There is some, right? Because the first Aliyah and the second Aliyah. I mean, these are again. I don't know what year he wrote Likutei Halachot specifically, but there was agriculture. But it was for most people not practical, right? And but nowadays, right, Shvi'it, Trumot, Masra, all the time, right? These are, you know, I got over the summer. One of our students was still here in the summer, and he picked some grapes off of a vine, and then he brought it in his house, and he called me to ask how to be mafresh tumot and masrot. Meaning nowadays, you remember that, by the way, if you pick from any of these public spaces and bring it to your house. If you eat it outside, you're fine. It's arai, right? The halacha is, right, you're allowed to eat arai from the tree in the field, but if you bring it into the house, you better be mafresh tumot and masrot. So if you need help with that, let me know, and that will happen, right? There's a tree right out here with something. I don't remember what, some sort of berry. Yeah. Doesn't matter. Then you cut it into pieces, okay. And it's a little bit annoying, but it happens. Okay. You know, I've done that when I went cherry picking. I had to do, you know, fresh trimmer in my throat. I have a bunch of things. I have tevel in my house right now because I just went to trees down like just on the side of the road, on the side of the hiking path, and we picked a bunch of pomegranates. But I haven't gotten around to it.
So if I pick 11 pomegranates, I have to give one of the pomegranates and then
I'll
pick another pomegranate as
maaser? No, but I'll tell you how. No, because maaser is monetary, so you have to mafresh it, but you're allowed to eat it, so you don't actually give it to the levy nowadays. Truma is more complicated. Truma and maaser sheni is more complicated, where you do have to deal with that. You have to, the maaser sheni you'll redeem on a coin. The truma you have to wrap up and, you know, get rid of, let rot, unless you want to find a kohen and give it to his animal. Because the Kohen is Tameh, but he can give it to his animal, which is why the zoos in Israel are owned by Kohanim. Like, we do a, the way we sell, like, our chametz, we sell all of the zoos in Israel to Kohanim, because then you can feed them all the Trumot and Maaserot. So the animals technically belong to, I don't know, some Kohanim. I think that's true, at least of the Gana Tanachi, and then Rei Slifkin's one also, I think. No. That, but he officially sells it to a like it's that that's what it right he sells it to a Kohen, or Kohen is the technical owner of all the animals of the animals. It doesn't have to be the zoo, of the animals, right, of the animals. That's what we do with a lot of our Trumot and Maaserot. The Seder Taharot, right, this is the laws of purity, which is nearly impossible. It's very complicated. And that's also very important to God. Someone said this before, right? That now the Chafetz Chaim says, not only, like Ezra Isaac said, that it's important to learn things that aren't practical because you have to know the Torah, but at a certain level, it's especially the case, maybe Evan said it before, right? That if you learn something which is not practical, specifically there it shows that you love God and you love His Torah, because to say you're committed to mitzvot and I'm learning for practical purposes is one thing. To make sure that you know all the Torah, it's specifically the parts that are less practical that show that you're committed to learning Torah for its own sake. Someone said that. So that's the Chafetz Chaim's second argument. Dash limud seder kodshim afshu gamkin ino gelema aseh bizman hazeh. So now he says, so first of all, right, you might think that the Chafetz Chaim is going to say that the primary reason he wants to learn Kachem is because of the value of loving Torah, but that's not what he says, right? Instead, he says, as several people said, well, we're hoping it will be practical, right? For the Chafetz Chaim was famous for being obsessed with Tzipita LeYeshua, right? With looking forward to Mashiach. And he famously had a suitcase. You've heard this before. I don't know if it is or not. The story they tell about him, I don't know. I wasn't there, right? Was they had a suitcase ready to go if Mashiach came. But the point is, he was very into this. He was very, he was very into practically preparing. And he was a Kohen as well, hence his name, right? Kagan is just Yiddish for Kohen. I don't know. It's true in I don't know. It's the same in Russian, right? Like Hegel in Russian is like Gegel or something like that. I don't know these languages. I'm not a huge language person, but I know that you can ask a language. Someone is always a language person. There you go. That's right. Hegel in why? I don't know. Right. So why it becomes a G? I don't know. But again, I don't know why in Arabic, right, specifically, right, the, like, Azag becomes Gaza. Why the ayin? I do know why, because they're gutturals, right? I assume that's the relator, right? Because Azag and Gaza actually come from the same place, right? So, I don't know. Anyways, point is, he says, here, it's not just. So, point one is that it's valuable to learn Kachim because we learn all of Torah and shows we love it. But point two, he says, it's actually practical. It's not practical in the sense I'm going to do it now. It's practical in the sense that we would like it to be practical, and therefore, and many later thinkers talk about this, it is specifically important to learn Kachim as an expression of belief that it will one day be practical. He said, Mikol Makom, Halimud Ba'en, Hu Na'ale Ma'od Ma'od, learning them is very rarefied. V'itam Midrash Sha'al Seder Kachim Ne'amar Bikra, Mitzvat Hashem Barami Reit, and I'm specifically about Kachim. We say that the mitzvot of Hashem are clear, they enlighten the eyes, v'karov hulu madrega rishona, and it's close to the first value, meaning practical learning, v'pnei sheyesh bo kol dinei ha-karbanot, because it has all the laws of the sacrifices, v'ashoneh bahen ap bizman hazeh u'chashov ki'ilu ikriv karbanot mamash. And now he introduces argument three, which is that the Gemara and the Midrashim in several places say that anybody, right, he says, he quotes the Gemara in Menachot Daf Yud, which is the last daf in Menachot. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak Ma'idach Liv Zot Torat HaChatat, Zot Torat HaAsham, Kol HaOsek B'Torat Chatat, Ki Ilu Hikriv Chatat, V'Kol HaOsek B'Torat HaSham, Ki Ilu Hikriv HaSham. Anyone who learns the laws of the Chatat is if he brought the Chatat. Anyone who learns the law of the Asham is if he brought the Asham. What is, by the way, what we'll do this more on Sunday, but what is the Chatat? Sin offering. Good. Yeah, what is that? When do you bring it? That's right, right? If something that if you had done it on purpose, you'd either be liable to the death penalty or karet, right? If you do it by accident, then you bring a chatat kvua, right? A chatat kvua, yeah. Does it only apply to what? So Evan asked the right question here. So this is actually a machloket, where some thinkers think that this is a generalizable principle, right? Namely, that any, all mitzvot, there's an aspect of it where if you learn about it, it's as if you did it. And some think that, no, this is unique to karbanot, that specifically by karbanot, if you learn the laws, it's as if you did them. Right, the Chafetz Chaim seems to think, which one? The latter, right? Because he's introducing why there's a unique reason by Kachim he seems to think that it's unique by Karbanot, right? That this is a unique reason to learn this, but it's not clear, right? I didn't want to give you too much beyond this, but yeah, if I open my file, I can read you one of the sources that disagrees with this. Let's see. What? What do you mean? Like learning about performing? Like if you're planning to do not? I mean, here it is. What was it? Okay, I'll have to find my my source. But I, if you want, I have a source sheet which we've done this when we did Menachot a few years ago. But not everyone agrees with the Chofetz Chaim here that this is unique to Karbanot. And it just happens to be that by Karbanot, now, even if you think that this is a general principle, that when you learn Torah, it's as if you performed it, there's still a unique reason why this is relevant to Karbanot, which is this is the only option we have. Right? It doesn't replace the practical mitzvot when you can perform it. Right? So, and that might actually be worse, right? I spend, you know, 4 weeks learning Hilchot Etrog, and then when Sukkot come, I say, well, I learned it, and, you know. Right? That's obviously worse, but by coming out, this is all you can do. Yeah. So that's an interesting question, right? Does it apply to all? That's also unclear. Ah, very good, right? So, oh. Yes, so that's a very interesting question. Is the Karbanot, so in addition to Evan's question, is this about all mitzvot or just Karbanot, you have to ask, is the Gemara being very specific when it says, when you learn Chatat Hashem, because you're right, certain of our tefillot are parallel to, let's say, the Tamid. So the question is, when it says it's parallel to the Tamid, what does that mean? Right? What does it mean it's parallel to the Tamid? One way of saying is that if it weren't for the fact that we don't have the Beit HaMikdash, we wouldn't have tefillot at all. Right? The other is that because we don't have the Tamid, we formalized the rabbinic obligation of tefillah in a particular way to mirror that, but it's not reducible to being a replacement for Karbanot. Right? And obviously, if you take the latter view, a lot of that's going to come down to the question, and this is debated by academics, was there any sort of formal prayer at all that existed prior to the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, right? And that comes a lot down to basically one word in the Gemara, which is when the Gemara talks about the establishment of the Amidah, and the Gemara says that they were misader, right? They in Yavneh, they set it up. What does that mean? Does that mean it didn't exist at all prior to the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, and therefore in Yavneh they invented it whole cloth? Or it existed in some form, and then once the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, they had to formalize it, right? But it existed in some form prior, right? So if you look at academics like Joseph Heinemann and things like that, right, they spent a lot of time debating this, where Heinemann assumes, for example, that it pre-existed. And also, right, within Chazal, you have to understand that in the Bavli, right, there's two options as to where the Karbanot came from and whether they're debating historically, right, meaning you can also wonder when the Gemara says it's established by the Avot, which is one position, or the other saying it was established because of the Karbanot, are they arguing historically, meaning one said Tefillah pre-existed Beit HaMikdash, the destruction of Beit HaMikdash, the other says it didn't, or are they arguing about when we chose to establish it, which became the primary model? And the Yerushalmi, at any rate, has three views. Right? The Yerushalmi adds a view that the Karbanot were set up to parallel simply the three times of day, right, which is morning, evening, night. In which case, what? So it might, and it may be both, right? La halacha, it may be both. It may, the Gemara is not really arguing, right? It may be that it's, right, you know, or we accept multiple, right? It's not clear how much that's a machloket, but you're right. I mean, that's going to be part of the question is, right, to how seriously do we take this? And obviously, and it's, right, it's a double question. One is going to be in Shmona Asra and the Amidah. The other is going to be on the recitation of the Karbanot, which the tour, when he invokes, right at the beginning of the tour, when he talks about why we say Karbanot, which I don't know how many of you actually say in the Karbanot, but, you know, that part of your Siddur that many of you don't say, right, between Brachot and Psukei Zimra, which is Karbanot, the reason that the tour invokes is because, well, reciting the Psukim in particular is somehow different, right? I even saw someone suggest, interestingly, though, it was new to me, but I saw one woman suggest that when she, after she gave birth, she read the psukim or learned, I'm not really sure if she read the psukim or learned the topic of Yoledet to at some point, you know, be mekayim the chiyuv there. So again, there are different manifestations that you could see this. Yeah. In again, clarify in lieu of meaning. Meaning, what do you mean by in lieu of? Meaning, the position of the Gemara that says, okay, right, meaning the Gemara, one of the deodas that is parallel to the Karbanot, whether it's in lieu of or parallel to, but yes, according to that position, yeah.
Yes, according to that position, praying voluntarily is the sacrificial equivalent of voluntary.
Correct, presumably.
On the Sabbath, one may not bring a voluntary sacrifice.
Correct.
Voluntarily,
so that's a good question, right? On Shabbat in general, we don't do voluntary requests, right?
Right.
The only requests we do are ones that are integrated into the tefillah. But if that, but that doesn't seem to be primarily a problem with the Karbanot. Correct, but it doesn't seem to be, yes, the Yerushalmi in the 15th parak of Shabbat, yes. I'm glad you know that. But it's quoted l'halacha, it's in the Rush, in the beginning of the 7th parak of Racha. Halacha Aleph, if m'zachor l'nachar. Correct. But yes, it's in the Yerushalmi, the 15th parak. I think Halacha Gimel in Zachor Le'Nachan and in the Yerushalmi. Okay, I mean, did I see it recently? I did when I did Yerushalmi. Well, whatever. I mean, it was a few years ago, but yeah. Anyways, but yes, the Yerushalmi does say it. But yeah, right, in general, the reason is because of Agmat Nefesh, right? Is the pain and therefore things that are established. But there is a tension. There are different reasons offered for why we don't know. But you're right. That's going to be part of the discussion. Okay. So here, the Chafetz Chaim, though, invokes this principle, which, again, may be universal, may be unique to Karbanot, may be unique to certain types of Karbanot. And he says, by Karbanot, there is the added one where it's practical in the sense this is the only way we can do the mitzvah. And that's what he says. V'achshav she'ein anu makrivin mehen, mal litasek b'en amr l'makadosh baruch hu, hol v'atem mitaskim b'hem, ki'ilu atem makrivim otam. Right? The Midrash says, both of it, this appears in many places, both in the Psikta, right? He's quoting the Psikta. There's versions of it at the end of Menachot, versions in the Psikta, versions in different Midrashim, that when we ask God, well, what are we supposed to do? Now that we don't have Karbanot, God says, well, if you learn it, so then it is as if you fulfilled it. Now, it's interesting because we have other things, as you noted by Tefillah, but in other Tanaitic sources, we have Chesed going in that category, right? That Chesed is now in lieu of, and the question is, what does it mean in lieu of, right? Is it in place of, or it's accomplishing metaphysically what Karbanot did for us, right? But there seems to be a unique value to learning about Karbanot that it makes it as if we brought it. And that's what he quotes here from the end of the Midrash. V'im tit asku bahen ma'alan yilechem ki'ilu ha-karbanot, b'karbanot atem asukim. I'll make it as if you were involved in the Karbanot. V'im rison cha leida ma ra leida bo u're'e k'shakadosh baruch hu'e lecheskel tshur abayit ma omer. Hagated Beit Yisrael ve'ed Abayit Amrei Cheskel v'nei Kodesh Baruch Hu Rebono Shel Olam Ad Achshav Anu Netunim B'kol Laba Eretz. On any rate, so he tells you, Cheskel in the Midrash, until now you were in the Galut, right? You were in exile with amongst our enemies, V'ata Omrei Leilech L'odil Yisrael Tzurat Abayit, and yet he tells him, right, the end of Yecheskel, if you ever learned Yecheskel, how many of you learned Yecheskel? Okay, so the very end of Yecheskel is where God describes the Beit HaMikdash, and he says, why are you doing it? Because even though you're in Galut, I want you to describe it. Now, you might just say that's part of a promise for the future, but the Midrash says, no, it's Katuv Otel Enehem, Yishmurut Kol Tzura Devech Kol Godav, Umay Yichon Lasod Heina Lehem, Acheo Min HaGola, V'achar Kach Ani Holech V'Omer Lehem, Amar Lekal Shmur Chesgal, V'Chishvil She Banay Nitum Gal Yehei Abinyan Batel, Gedola Kriyata Betara Kibinyana. Right, so God says, no. Yecheskel says to God in the Midrashic imagination, God, why am I teaching the Beit HaMikdash? We're in Galut. And rather than just say, well, you're going to need to rebuild it, what does God say? No, I want you to learn it now. Not just you're ready, but I want you to learn it now because it's if you built it. Which seems to expand this principle at least beyond the sacrifices themselves and to sacrificial law, right? Because the building of the Beit HaMikdash is not the Karbanot itself. Yes, Evan. So that good. So another part of it, and we'll see later, is, right, is that it's an expression of making, right, of our requirement to believe and to hope for the Beit HaMikdash. And we'll see that. So if you want to skip down, right, he develops this idea basically now till the end of the, the end of this column. I'll try to go in order, but we'll come back. That's not going to be on page 3. Okay, if you skip down now on page 2, and this is something the Rambam is going to make a point of as well. Another reason the Chafetz Chaim, so we've seen so far for the Chafetz Chaim, why does he say we should learn it? One is, it's important to learn things that are not practical, show how much we love Torah. B, it's important to learn it because it will be practical. C, specifically because there's a localized value or maybe universalizable value that when you learn Torah, it's as if you perform the mitzvah, specifically by Karbanot, where we don't have the option at the moment of practically bringing any carbon out, with the exception, what's the one carbon that we probably could manage to bring, or at least was a big machloket? Carbon Pesach, correct. This was a very famous machloket between who and who? No, before that, earlier. Rabbi Yaakov Etlinger in the Drishat Zion, right, in Binyan Zion, and Ritzvi Hirsch Kalischer. Right, Rabbi Kiva Eger was involved, Chatham Sofer got it, and maybe you met, the person in this world who's trying to make it the most practical. He came speak to us last year, but my immediate next-door neighbor, two doors down, Hanan Kupietsky, has been very involved in bringing Parot Adumot to Israel. They're planning on sacrifice it's not really a carbon, on bringing them when they reach 2 years old. We went as yeshiva last year to see the Parah Adumot, but part of it is because the easiest carbon we can then bring, you'd be bring the Parah Adumot Bitara. What? Five. We went to visit them last year at the end of the year. What? So Karban Pesach, you don't need the Beit HaMikdash, you need the Mizbeach. So they would just build the Mizbeach. That's some people's goal. Interesting people in this world. What? I mean, technically, you could bring a Betumah. That's what the other reason that people want to bring the Pesach, or I mean, again, this is going back 200 years, was because you can bring it when you're impure. If majority of Klal Yisrael is impure, so then Tumah Hutra or Dechuya Betzibor.
Wait, why is the Passover lamb unique?
So you're correct that it's not fully unique in that sense, right? Because all the karbanot are nidchev from it. It has certain unique aspects, like it's the only one you can eat, bitumah, right? The Pesach... What? Yes, because the Pesach, as the Gemara says, is in several places throughout, right, in the middle of Pesachim, is that it's nitna, right? It was given only la'achila, right? It's because its identity is wrapped up in eating. Other karbanot you can bring, you can't eat. This one you could actually eat, which also makes it unique. Also, it's the communal one, right? It's in a unique way. Pesach Sheni is also true. If Rov Klal Yisrael were Tamei, well, Pesach Sheni. If the majority of Klal Yisrael is Tamei, you can bring it and eat it bitumah. Okay. Right, then there are all types of interesting middle cases of exactly 50%, and then what if it's most of the Kohanim but not most of Am Yisrael? Right, then there are all types of right other cases, right? Because Rove is defined in unique ways. Because all the Kohanim are Tame. Well, say this again. Well, there's no. You do need a Mizbeach, right? You need a Mizbeach. You don't need a Mikdash. You can build a Mizbeach without a bit of Mikdash, but you need the Mizbeach in its proper place. And politics. So two big problems. And possibly, this is a big machlok, but I said, this is a machlok, and I'm not weighing in halachically here, but this has been a machlok for several hundred years of whether we should do this. Hanan obviously wants to go farther. Like, I mean, he probably told you over the summer, he has the Parat Adumot, but he also has the land on Har HaZeitim, which is exactly parallel to Kodesh HaKadashim, which is where you bring it. And he has Kohanim who have been separated since birth and are Tahor. Like he has a few Kohanim around Israel whose mothers, since they were born, have kept them pure and in special rooms and places and make sure that when they walk outside, they're under no trees that might be under, like, they're, like he's ready. He is ready to go. He is ready to go. Hanan is, I love Hanan. I have great neighbors. I have great neighbors. It's wonderful. And this isn't his day job. This is his hobby. His day job is he runs a tech startup. Like, he runs a tech startup.
I wanted to ask this to a book for a while.
So there's a Mishnah in Tara that says that the people that would handle the Tara, right? But the woman would go down to this area and they would give birth there, and the children were essentially not allowed to interact with the rest of the world.
Right, so there's a few of those going in. Yeah.
Is that Siren involved with like not allowing these children to enact?
Look, there's a few mothers who did that, and their sons are pure Kohanim walking around Israel. So I don't know how they fared socially. I don't know. Can ask Hanan. I don't know, but he told me he has such Kohanim.
Okay.
He has like I don't know, but I believe him.
Okay.
I've lived next to him for 5 years. I believe him. Okay, you know. Then when he brought me to see the cows, I believe you know. It's quite intense, actually. Anyways, so yeah. fun times. So, the next reason that he gives, and this is something we mentioned, is that Kachim is uniquely anchored in biblical law. All right, so he looks here, if you go to the paragraph, I put the arrow there, and he says, Uvasher nitpone nuchal od lahavin, ki nichbad v'gadol erech limud seder kachim mikol sidrei hashas. It is more rarefied. Now, there are some people who would fight you tooth and nail. I remember that when I was in Gush, someone raised this point, which is that he liked learning whatever Masechet was. He didn't want to learn, I think, Erevin for a whole year, because then the whole year would be involved just in rabbinic law, and Rav Moshe Lichtenstein went ballistic, because not less Talmud Torah. But the Chafetz Chaim is thinking exactly that way. And the Chafetz Chaim says, listen, it is more rarefied than the rest of Shas. Shevishare Sidarim Matzino Kama Mesechet Benuya Rak Al Mamar Echad O Parsha Echad Bedar. He said some are based on biblical law, but they're based on a few verses, right, or a single verse, right? Like
Ramban says that Mesechet Kitten starts with this rabbinic invention of Ubanenefem.
You pronounced it right, yay.
Because it's beloved by the rabbis, because it's a
yeah. Yeah, right, at some level, right? Meaning we don't talk about whether it's a mitzvah to divorce ever, or when you're allowed to get divorced, till daf tzadi, out of tzadi. Well, whatever. The last daf of getting, the beginning is all the rabbanans. Yes, correct. Right? However, the Chafetz Chaim is like, no, but kachim, so all psukim, and it's not one pasuk. Right? That sounds right. Right. Look, Rav Elchanan Wasserman also. Rav Elchanan Wasserman has an interesting argument at rabbinic law. Right. And he says, right, Rav Elchanan Wasserman uniquely thinks that rabbinic law is an expression of divine will also. And that's why it's obligatory directly, because it's an expression of God's will. So he says, then why are we more lenient? So he comes up with this theory in Kuntras de Resofrim that the number of words that are devoted to a text in the Torah have normative value. So if something is revealed God's will but has no words in the Torah, then makes it a lesser revelation, even though it's God's will, right? I'm just saying, the Chon Rosman is also Talmud Chafetz Chaim, right? But you see that he actually thinks, so if you take, for example, Masechet Kiddushin, right? There are, how many psukim in Torah are devoted to Kiddushin and Gerushin? Four. And it's not really true, because really those four psukim, three of them are devoted to machzir gushato, right? To the prohibition to remarry a wife that one has divorced, has remarried someone in the middle. And only the first pasuk is ki kach ishu va'ala. That is the entirety of Kiddushin. Usnea, and then he hates her. We're already on Gittin, and by the second pasuk, we're in Machzir Gerushin. So Masechet Kiddushin and Gerushin come down to about half a pasuk each, right? And change, right? And random other psukim, right? Shabbat, okay, has more than that, right? Nidarim is one parsha, right? Erevin is none, right? So, I mean, it is, but it's really based on a derabbanan around carrying. So it has some derabbanan, but like most of it is on the rabbinic laws around Erevin. But Karbanot, it's the opposite. There's a lot of psukim, right? And we're going to see the Rambam on Sunday. The Rambam is going to say the amazing thing about Kachim is you all should know it well, because most of the laws are straight from psukim. and Vidailacha Kimabiram Hizo and whatever, right? So the Chofetz Chaim says, he says, it's particularly about Shavu Shars Zarim, but Sinu Kamu Sechle Benuyo Rak Al Mamar Echad, O Parsha Achat Shabitara. Mitzvot are built on one Pasuk, one Parsha. Kayadua. Val Seder is a low Nimra Vinishnu Parsha Shleimot. Vikimat Rov Sefer Vayikra, Vakam Kari Shleimot, Vesefer Shmot, Bamidvar Dvarim. He says, it's all Sefer Vayikra. Good percentage of Shmot. Bamidvar and Varim is Karbanot. There are thousands of psukim on Karbanot. And not one. Right? Thousands. Well, right? And again, Torah isn't that long. Torah is... How many psukim is Torah? How many psukim is it according to our count? How many psukim is it according to the Gemara?
How many psukim is it according to the Masorah?
5,845. How much is it according to the Bali Masorah quoted in the Gemara? 5,888. I don't know. I don't know. What? Correct is hard to tell here because it's not a question of what words are there. It's a question of where you put an etnachta versus a sof pasuk, right? Like a count, right? It's a counting question. No, it's not missing words. It's missing, it's where you break up sukkim. Well, some of the Girsa and the Gemara change it. The better text of the Gemara say 5,888, but some of the Girsas change it to 5,845. Shocking, right? If you ever look at the Frankel Rambam, which is one of the better Girsaot of the Rambam, Sefer Ahava, which is the second book in the Yad HaChazaka, is written as, not bet, but Aleph with two stars. Why is it Aleph with two stars? Because it came out last. Because there was a big fight, because the Rambam's list in the Better Girsot of the Parsha breaks in the Torah are not the same as the ones we have in our Chumash. All this type of gets people very controversial. Yes. Right, and he bases it on the Aleph Codex. Correct. So that was very controversial. Okay. So the Rambam has a list in Sefer Ava, which is where he has the Halachot of Talmud, of Ketivat Sefer Torah, of writing a Torah. He tells you all the Parsha breaks. Okay. Right? He just literally goes through the entire Torah and says, Parsha break here. If you open up our Torah, it's not the same as the Rambam's, but the Rambam claims to have the most authoritative based on the Aleph Codex, right? So it was very controversial to publish it because people didn't want to publish the Rambam's list, which is against our Torah, because all these types of things get very controversial, but so by Psukim, it's a little bit easier because the Chumash doesn't look different, right? But Parsha breaks is more controversial. By Psukim, we all know that you can... Right, you can break something up in a esnachta, just like in English. Right, you could, if you most sentences, you break it at the semicolon, you'll be fine. Right, you can take a sentence that breaks at a semicolon, make it two sentences. That's what a semicolon is. Right, it's a stronger break than a comma, slightly softer than a period. But if you wanted to, you could break it up with a period. Right, so the same thing in the psukim, an esnachta functions like a semicolon. Right. It's a harder break, right? It's a second. It's sof pasuk is the hardest break, and then tanachna is a second level break, and then there are other breaks, right? So the Chofetz Chaim says, yeah, this is kama kol sukh v'sukh v'kol safek shebishas nanamar v'sidra kol sove v'olach be'etzam ha-mitzvah katuv b'torah. Right? It goes most things. It's on a pasuk levar pratav in yanav imkain meroya ayelik voli mudenu neivaseder as a yoter mikol shar hastarim v'nafochu. So logically, we should learn this more than everything else. And on the contrary, people do the opposite. Can lifnei rova lom dimbizmanenu nasa seder as a kishiyare mitzvah. And he says now people treat it like the leftovers of a mitzvah. Right? They don't learn it. Okay, so that's his next one. Right? Is that this is uniquely anchored in biblical law? The next one where I put that next box is, and he says, more than that, it is fundamentally practical. It is nogea l'maaseh, right? In principle, it is practical. In principle, it is practical. So now if we skip down, right? So you skip to where I put the little boxes, preparation, right? His next question is, right, he has a lot of other stuff in the middle of that, but to try to at least cover his main arguments, he says, "Va'od she'ela achat esha. Ilo yaba mevaser ne'eman li'Yisrael shebizman karov tia gula." He said, okay, let me ask you a question. If right now we would get, right, a WhatsApp that Mashiach is coming. I don't really know how Mashiach is going to announce himself, but... What? Yeah, but how is he going to communicate, you know, with... He'll come in a whirlwind, I don't know, a bot call, I don't know, WhatsApp, I don't know, Instagram, I don't know, right, TikTok, look at that, look at that. All of the above, what? Well, that probably, yes. What?
Conversations with Christians where they ask, how would I know what the Messiah is? And I say it's very, very simple. A guy starts doing the stuff that the prophets say that the Messiah will do.
That's who I'm going to say is
Israel. Oh, yeah?
Well, there you go.
The state of Israel. I'm the most for the Messiah.
Don't you see that as a literature of the verses?
There you go.
Especially when he never went to
and died. Yes. Okay. Anyways, what? Right. 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 Exactly. Exactly. Okay. So the Chofetz Chaim then says, okay, if someone would come tomorrow or today and say, "Hi, Mashiach is here. We have Parah Adumot waiting. Chanan has five Parah Adumot waiting. We have the land. We're starting work in the Beit HaMikdash tomorrow." So what would happen? So if you have a shayla, you have a halachic question on my spoon, my dairy spoon fell into my fleishik sink, call up most rabbis and they'll tell you within 5 seconds what halacha is, big deal. And the answer will always be, it's fine. It's fine. It'd be very hard for it not to be fine. It's very rare that a question like that is not fine.
Well, I mean, if the thing is filled with hot water...
Yeah, how often does that happen? Usually it's my clean dairy spoon fell into my empty fleishik sink and it touched the metal. It's like, okay, why are you telling me this? Like, okay, I mean, that's very interesting. Rinse it off and use it, I don't know. Like, what do you want from me? Once in a while, you get a shayla where it actually messes things up. It is so rare, though. Most of the time, kosher child is not like that. Sometimes it is. Yes, once many years ago, one of my wife's friends called her up and she said, "I was making an omelet in, you know, those small egg pans, like the one just the size of an omelet. And I accidentally took the spatula that I had just used a few minutes ago in my meat soup, and it was a cheese omelet." And we were like, wait a second, because we're going through the questions. Is it Ben Yomo? Oh, it is Ben Yomo, right? It's within 24 hours. You just used it. Okay, great. So sometimes we get out of it with shishim, because you use a spoon, you take a fleishik spoon, and you stir, you know, and you stir like a huge pot. So maybe you have to kosher the spoon, right? But like the pot isn't going to be trade because it has to be 60, right? Because of 60. But here it was a spatula, and the little pot is like, you know, this big. It's just the size of an egg. Like, oh wait, it's Ben Yomo, and you used a spatula and a small pot or pan. I'm like, wait a second. I'm pretty sure everything. The pot has to be kosher, and the thing has to be kosher, and the thing is you have to throw out the omelet. I'm like, I was in Rai Willig's here, and I went to Rai Willig. He's like, I've been a rabbi for like, it's like in my 45 years of answering shaylos, I've never had such a good textbook case where the answer is actually it's all usher. That never happens. It's always mutter, right? But that actually, that happens. Then it's usher. So it does happen. It's just rare.
Even if it's a spatula, there's not realistically going to be
but it was,
question.
But it was, no, but it was within 24 hours.
Well, and so it's put Ben Yomo.
Right.
It's Ben Yomo.
So then we judge the entire, the entire... you know, volume of the spatula.
Right, okay.
Yeah. So it happens, just not usually. Usually the shayla you get is like, my spoon fell.
Another example, if there's a fleishik sink, there's a funny trick thing with hot water and a melted spoon falls in.
Assuming the water is yatso leaded, and assuming there isn't enough soap that's going to be make the taste pogum, and then you could create a problem. But I don't know about you. I don't wash my dishes with scalding hot water. Like, that hurts my hand. Maybe you do. I let my dishwasher do that. If I'm doing that, I put it in my dishwasher. I have a call down. You know, but with my hands, I don't do it. Right? So then it's not going to be a problem. But the evidence, I'm going to be a problem. Yeah. So if it's yatso leded, then you're going to have to kosher the sink, yeah. Right? If it's yatso leded straight from the edge, you'll have to kosher the sink. Yeah, then you'd have to do it. If it's dairy, like you pour like boiling hot milk or like a French onion soup or something. So if the water, if it's pariv, like the water itself, so then it depends on ben yomo, it depends on shishim, right? Like if I poured like a French onion soup with cheese on top, then obviously. If it's the water, then it depends. Then you got to do all the normal things. Ben yomo and da 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 da. Oh, anyways, so the Chofetz Chaim says, but the point being, he says, look, those shailas I can answer. If tomorrow the Beit HaMikdash was built, and now you said, aha, so how do I shech the carbon? Most rabbis, most, even the biggest Talmidei Chachamim, will tell you, well, right? I have this stinking suspicion that there's a lot of Talmidei Chachamim even, that if I would ask them, where would I even look in the Rambam to know these halachot, they would get it wrong. Because they would look in Hilchot Karbanot, and they'd be wrong, because it's an Avodah. Right? Because Karbanot is when you bring the Karbanot, Avodah is how you bring the Karbanot. Right? So you know, right? Like, people don't know it, and he says it's a problem. Hayyum is Darzin, Alfi Revo Yisrael Lomar Halachot Shech Karbanot. He said, suddenly everyone would wake up and say, Oy Gevalt, we need to learn these halachot, we have no idea what we're doing. So Chofetz Chaim says, so why don't you solve that problem by, and this is a crazy idea, learning it before that happens. Yay! Right? He says, it's not just the Kohanim. Lo mi by the Kohanim. Right? This is why, like, when I was in yeshiva, my roommate was a Kohen. And he's like, look, Beit HaMikdash can come tomorrow. What am I going to do? I need to be able to kill birds with my nail. Right? Malika. So he had a nail. Because, you know, several inches long. Right? Because, you know how long it takes to grow a nail? Right? You can't just, it's not like tomorrow you could wake up and say, aha, my nails that I bite on are sharp enough and long enough to kill a bird. It's not so easy. Right? So he had a nice, long, sharpened nail. Right? He's like, for sure the Kohanim. But he says, Avli Yisraelim, even non-Kohanim, Achilat Kachim, Beit HaMikdash, there's all the laws going into the Beit HaMikdash, eating Karbanot. You have to know. You don't want to, like, what are we going to do? So he says, if that's the case, Avgam Yisraelim, Shara Achilat Kachim, Beit HaMikdash, Nogel Likulam. And he says, the Gedolim, the Poskim. I will very rarely switch into Yeshivish pronunciation, but if I'm saying Gedolim, then, you know, sort of need it. But you need it. They all have to be the Poskim. They need to know what they're doing. He says, we're waiting every day for Mashiach to come, Shiavo, b'meira, k'mo shanu shalosh pamim b'chol yom, like we say three times a day, dot, 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 dot. He says, listen, it's going to be practical, and therefore he says, A is going to be practical, and it's an expression of the belief that it will be practical. So learning Kachim, having in mind that it's practical, is also an expression of faith, that this will one day, again, be practical. Right now, what would he say if he knew that Rav Kook held that in the time of Mashiach we'd only bring Menachot? So then he'd say, oh, so you shouldn't learn Zvachim, you should learn Menachot. I don't know. I assume the Chofetz Chaim didn't hold of that. Okay. And then he notes in the next paragraph, right, that Chagai gets particularly angry, right? There are some, many of the Nevi'im, many of the prophets spend most of their time on ethical laws. Yeshayahu and Yirmiyahu. However, certain Nevi'im focus on Mikdash. So Malachi famously criticizes the people for telling them, you're bringing bad Karbanot. What is his critique of them? What words does Malachi use? No. He says worse than that. He says, it's not just they don't have the right intentions, they bring bad Karbanot. Like, and what does he say? Hakriveyu na lefechatecha, yitzecha yisafanecha. Try bringing the same thing to your officers, to the government officials, see how much they like it. Right? You're bringing that to me. But Chagai, right? Very good, right? So Chagai, he says, look at Chagai. Sha'al na'ira kohanim Torah. Right, Ayin Sham Bikra Mashin Shegar Hashem Yitrach Atshuva Kohanim. He goes and he tests them, and when they don't know the answer, he lambasts them. What, you don't know Karbanot? He says it is particularly humiliating when people don't know the laws of Karbanot.
Is it true that
Chagai is not long, by the way? Ah, so the question of what laws, this is an interesting thing, is that many of the laws, both in Yechezkel and Chagai, are laws that are not explicit in the Torah. Right?
Even Jeremiah talks about carrying outside of city gates.
Correct. Right. And in Yeshayahu, right? Yes, Yeshayahu Nunchet. Correct. A lot of these discussions in Yeshayahu and in Yirmiyahu and Yechezkel and Chagai are about things that are not explicit in the Torah, which points to how much of this was. Right, was accepted tradition, even though it isn't explicit in the Torah. Correct, right? But for these purposes, the Chafetz Chaim his point is, look, he just gets angry at them because they don't know the Karbanot, and he says, look how far we are now, right? Give me Yemed lefi mashir nidachaknu kaet milimura seder azal shchitat kochem advar mefor Russian bekra. He said, now it's worse because, as you correctly note, Chagai is asking about things that are not explicit in the Torah, and still. God gets angry and Chagai gets angry. Chafetz Chaim says this is much worse because now we don't know the things that are in Chumash. Right? What does the Gemara call a mistake in when you make a mistake about something in Chumash? What does the Gemara call that? No, it calls it so there's two different types of mistakes. There are mistakes and then there are things that are so wrong that they don't count as mistakes. Right? They're beyond mistakes. So, for example, in Masechet Horio, the Gemara says that if you make a mistake, in Tabidvar Mishnah, right? You make a mistake, then there's something called Parhelim Davar Shel Tzibur. If the Sanhedrin HaGadol Yishuv Yerushalayim, if the High Court makes a mistake and the majority of Kol Yisrael follows them, then instead of each person bringing an individual Chatat, you bring the Parhelim Davar Shel Tzibur, the cow, because of the forgetting of the nation. But what if they make a mistake in something that's in the Pasuk? The Gemara says, no. Everyone has to bring their own Karban. Why? That's not called a Psak. You make a mistake in the Pasuk, it's what we call Zil Kari Beirav. What's Zil Kari Beirav? Is go back to elementary school, right? Zil, go Beirav, go to the rabbi, right? The little kids, and ask them the halacha, and they will know it. If you make a mistake on that, that's a non-mistake. It doesn't count as a psak. It's not a bad psak, it's a non-psak. It's so egregious. So the Chafetz Chaim says, now it's humiliating, right? You ask most people halacha, and it's like, Right, I mean, two of you are in MTA, so the story is always passed around. Rav Schechter and Rav Tversky are both fond of doing this, of asking people on Bechinot, which is, can a woman be a Nazir?
Yes.
Yes, and then he always asks, how do you know? And then many of the people will be like, well, there's the story in the Gemara of Hilni Amalka, da-da-da-da, and they'll wait for you to say, what's the answer? It's a pasuk. You just don't know chumash. That's your fault, not mine, right? So the Chafetz Chaim says it's humiliating. So far, what do we have? So the Chafetz Chaim has said many of the things we've talked about. Again, one is it's valuable to learn all of Torah. Two, it's especially valuable to learn things that aren't practical to show that you love it. Three, it will be practical. Four, it's an expression of our belief that it will be practical. Five. Either by all mitzvot or maybe uniquely by Karbanot, learning the halachot makes it as if you performed it, which since we can't perform Karbanot now, it's particularly important. Six, it will be humiliating for us if we don't know even that which is in the Psukim, and we don't know how to do that which the Torah said. That will just be embarrassing and, you know, exactly what the prophets were not happy with us for. And then he says the next one, and this is very interesting, on the top of page 4, and this is something that appears several times in Sefer Chassidim. So Sefer Chassidim is a very interesting sefer written by who? A collection of the German pietists. What? It's written by a collection of German pietists, right? The German pietists who are contemporaneous with the Balei HaTosfot, but were focused on pietism and asceticism and things like that. Much of it is written by Rabbi Yehuda Chassid, but some is written by other members of that circle. But he has this idea several places, three places to be precise, I believe. Though Sefer Chassidim, it's hard to tell how often something comes up. It's different manuscripts, and the Margoliot edition is extremely different from the Parma edition. And there's like 20 other editions also. You can go on the Princeton website. They have the Sefer Chassidim Project, and you can look through all the different manuscripts. But he introduces the notion that several of you asked me about this morning because you didn't get it, which is the Meit Mitzvah. Right, which is, there is a halacha called Meit Mitzvah. What is a Meit Mitzvah? A body that is found with no one to bury it. Everyone, even Kohen Gadol, is obligated to violate the laws of purity, even to bury it, right? When no one is there to bury it, the mitzvah overrides everything. What? Well, how would you know? But the laws of burial are... The laws of burial are for Jews, yes. So the Chavetz Chaim here introduces from Sefer Chassidim this idea, and Sefer Chassidim says that any mitzvah that is not performed, that has fallen into, I don't know, whatever, just something, and any part of Torah that people don't learn takes on ki'ilu, the status of Meit Mitzvah, that now you have to come and... right, give it its due honor. Right, so this is what he quotes. He says, "V'gam milvad kol elin yanim el domel le'meit mitzvah." It's like a meit mitzvah. He quotes one of the places in Sefer Chassidim quote, "Hey, kol mitzvah she'in lo doreish ve'in mi she'levakeh shota tidrashena mefishu kemeit mitzvah." Any mitzvah that no one cares about, you have an obligation to care about. Sham mitzvah mikateret ve'omeret v'kama grua anochi, because otherwise the mitzvah metaphorically comes to God and says, why am I so pathetic? That no one cares about me. And then he says it. He says it in three places. Also in Reish Samach Aleph, that Ev lachada mitzvah dome lemeit mitzvah. Love the mitzvah that is like a mitzvah. She'ein la oskin. No one cares about it. No one's involved in it. Kagon she'tireh mitzvah bizuya ora she'ein lanu oskin ba. Shirash b'nei yirecha lomdim moed v'seder nashim. So he says everyone learns moed nashim. Tilmot Seder Kodshim, and his particular example is if everyone's learning Moed and Nashim, then someone has to come and learn Seder Kodshim. So the Chavetz Chaim says, me. What?
That's us,
exactly. And now he tells you, so why did he write this book? Well, he says, part of the reason that he wrote this book, he says, part of the reason he thinks no one reads it is because there's no cheats for him. He's like, it's hard, right? If you're reading Gemara and you want to know, you can look at the Rif, you can look at the Rav, right? So there's very little. There is the Rambam, but there's no Rif, there's no cheats. Now there is a bunch. You can see at my table all types of books on Kachem in the last 100 years, but there wasn't, right? So he says he's writing this so that now you'll have a Rif on Kachem. And that's what he tries to do here, right? So the Likutei Halachot is exactly that. Now, I will note that some of the other reason that people like Kachim, just to throw out some, is the Briskers tend to like it because A, it's very conceptual, and B, people who pride themselves in Chidushim and saying things that haven't been said before, the classic Yeshivish Masechta, there's a lot on. So, you know, it's harder to say something new. Kachim was less written on. It's also nice. You can say more things that people haven't said. That's true. Again, I just wanted you to go through this to see different reasons why it's important to learn Kachim. And that's what we're going to try. But like I said, you need to be familiar with the Psukim. You need to be familiar with the Mishnayot. We don't have so many Rishonim, which is nice. The Gemara itself is very conceptual. It's very nice. And that's what we're going to do. Right? We're going to try to learn Tzvachim. We'll see. I know some of the other Shir are jumping around different things. Like I said, in general, in Shir, I try to go in order, not necessarily from the beginning to the end, but I don't like to jump around at such point. If any, but I do want feedback. Like if guys say this isn't working, we can move to a different parak, and the like. You know, I don't prepare Shir that far in advance because I want to hear from you how things are going before I decide these are the next 20 things that I'm teaching. Okay, but again, that's the introduction a little bit on why to learn Kachim. It's obviously not exhaustive, and we will start on Sunday actually learning Kachim and Tzvachim.